do this thing. We were at Duffy's a couple weeks ago. I think somebody had given us a gift card or something. And so there's sports on everywhere. But then one of the sporting events must have ended. And on came like kind of an infomercial of like overseas rehab, but like where they go in and do surgeries for kids that are born disfigured or don't have these things. And so that's on the screen while we're eating, which I'm not, that's a good thing, we need to look at it, but one of our kids, I won't say which one, Alana, she couldn't handle it. She couldn't handle watching this. And she's like our like empathetic one, and just, she just couldn't handle seeing this. And she's like, "Daddy, get me out of here. Get me out of here, take me out." She had to go outside because, and again, it's not what you probably should be watching while you're eating dinner, so I get that part of it. But there's things in life that we just don't want to look at. They kind of force us to turn away, and because we're overwhelmed by it, we know we're guilty of it. And so that's what Ecclesiastes will do, and it can be uncomfortable. But what we've been talking about is that in Ecclesiastes, what he's continuing to do, he continually demolishes things that we see in the world in order to build something better. So he's going to look at the hard things. He's going to look at the things that we pursue, look at the things that we worship, and demolish them and say, like, "Hey, that will never satisfy you," in order to give us something better. And so that's what's going on here. And we're in Ecclesiastes 4, as Frank read, page 618. And David Gibson, one of the commentators, he called the sort of synopsis of this chapter, "We, not just me." That life is meant to live as we and not just me. It's not just about myself and us. And so today, what the author of Ecclesiastes is going to do is he's going to demolish one of the sacred cows of America. He's going to demolish individualism. And we're a country and we're a place that's just built on that. And a lot, it can make you successful in a lot of ways. But what he'll say as he demolishes it, he'll say it's going to leave you alone and isolated and miserable. And I want you to have a better life. I want you to have true life. And so he's going to build us back up to show that we, a life lived in community, will actually lead to flourishing and true life. The first three chapters of Ecclesiastes, there's just kind of been this call, like, hey, there's this brokenness in the world. It's complex. It's hard to navigate. We seek satisfaction in things that never really satisfy. So his kind of like takeaway each chapter, which is most people don't think of this as Christianity, is just a call to enjoy what you have as a gift from God. Just to enjoy it. Okay, life is going to be hard, life's going to beat you up, but God is going to give you good things, and the result is to enjoy those things, right? So we've been, I grew up playing golf. Kids now are, I've had a 10-year plan to get them addicted to golf, and it's worked, and we're there now. And so so now, like, I didn't do it when they were, like, super little. I'm like, "Oh, Karina's, like, with little kids all week," and then it's like, get home on a Saturday, "All right, girl, I'm gonna be gone for the next 6 hours. I'm gonna spend $80 and we'll see you at 2, right? That's not happening. I don't even want to do that. But I gave him a little bit over 10 years, and now Will's like full on. He's like, "Dad, when can we go? Dad, when can we go? Dad, when can we go?" So now it's like, we get to go do it together, so it's not as bad anymore. And we found this cheap little place. It's amazing. So anyway, we get this, and so for me, it's something that I just enjoy. It's outside. I don't have to think. It's fun. I get to do it with other people. I just enjoy playing golf. So God said, like, "Hey, I've given you these good things to enjoy." And we saw that for three chapters. And what he does now, he adds in chapter 4 a new layer to it. And what he's saying is, as you enjoy the gifts that God's given you, share them. Like, you're not a cul-de-sac of God's blessing. I'm sorry. Yeah, you're not a cul-de-sac. Like, you're a conduit. It's supposed to go through you, right? It's supposed to lead to other people. So as you enjoy all that God has given you, share it. Like, we're going back to preschool. This is it. This is Ecclesiastes chapter 4. Share. Right? And it is so that not that God can rob you of life or God wants you to be miserable. No, like, God wants you to have a good life. God wants you to have the best life. This aligns with last week, where there's this call to align our purposes with God. So the great commandments of the Bible are to love God, to place him at center as ultimate of all things, and love people. And so this is just fleshing out again what the Bible says everywhere. And so he starts out in the first eight verses and demolishes this view of life that individuality, a life centered on yourself, will bring you joy. And he just crushes because it shows all the problems that happen when you just live for yourself. And just so you know, that kind of our natural tendency is to look out for ourselves. I love in Philippians 2, he says, care for others as you care for yourself. He just assumes that you're going to take care of yourself. Like that's, we're going to look out for it. So he just assumes that. And so he just crushes this down because when we live just sort of just me, it's the enemy of community. And that means it's the enemy of flourishing. And so he's going to go through these various areas in the first eight verses. He's going to look at like what has a life of radical individualism, the effect that has on the world. It's going to show the effect that it has on our relationships with our neighbors. He's going to show the effects that it has on our work. And then the effects it has on us. He's going to say, it's just going to leave you all alone. And this first one, the effects of radical individualism that it has on the world. In verses 1 through 3, he says, again, I saw all the oppressions that are done under the sun. And behold, the tears of the oppressed, and they had no one to comfort them. On the side of their oppressors, there was power, and there was no one to comfort them. And I thought, the dead who are already dead, more fortunate than the living who are still alive. But better than both is he who has not yet and has not seen the evil deeds that are under the sun. He's saying, hey, because of this radical individualism, because when it's taken so far, it's actually better that people aren't born than born into. He's saying this is a bad deal. And he says that he saw all the oppressions that are under the sun. And what he's tying it to is there's this wickedness that's in chapter 3, verse 16. And he's saying, when you live for yourself, it leads to oppression of others. And this is one of those things that's hard to look at. All right, it's going to be hard for us to look at because we live in a country, we live in a culture, like we're oppressed in some ways, but like we have power. We have power. We just do. And again, some of this isn't our fault. We're just kind of like, I didn't pick who I was born to. I didn't really pick where I live. I didn't pick what I did. You're just kind of born into this. So this isn't like a guilt trip. One of the things that I like as I've been reading through the Old Testament, when they have this ritual, this Day of Atonement, and it's repenting of sins that you don't even know you're committing. And so this could fall under that category, but we need to see that there's all this oppression that's under the sun. And that idea of oppression, it means that you're cheating one's neighbor of something. You're cheating one's neighbor of something. It's defrauding somebody, like taking advantage of them. It's getting unjust gain. Like, I'm going to gain from this. It's an abuse of power. And what's going on here, what he's pushing against, is that there's people that are seeking their themselves, like the accumulation of stuff, accumulation of profit, accumulation of gain, without regard to others' needs or rights or conditions. It's an accumulation of stuff without regard to others' needs, rights, or conditions. Now, I wore this shirt on purpose. This is my favorite shirt. I don't like tags, so I don't really like this part of it. I'd like that to be cut out. And I think Tommy Hilfiger is one of the guys that said like he doesn't like that African Americans are wearing his clothes, and so like I don't really like him. But I do like this shirt. It meets my criteria. I used to think about like what just a shirt looks like, and I was like super into that. But I don't even care about like what's on a shirt. I actually like them plain. But the most important thing to me is how they fit. I want it to be fit right. And then I like how they feel is the next important thing to me. So it's got to be kind of soft and thin and like not scratchy. My kids got this too. And so like I don't like them super scratchy. And then my third thing is I don't like too much. Again, this is just my personal preference. I don't like too many patterns. And then I don't like labels. And so I found this shirt. I was shopping. I think we were going out of town or something like that. And I found it. And I was like, oh. This thing fits amazing. It's not scratchy. It's thin because we live in South Florida and it's miserably hot around here. And so like this is amazing. And then to top it all off, it was at Marshall's. So it was cheap. right? So that ticks another box for me. But the bottom line is, if you look at it, like, just Google fashion industry and oppression of people and who's making this shirt in China, and start looking at their working conditions and what they're doing and why Brian can get this fabulous shirt so cheap, it's oppressing other people, right? It's true. But guess what? I don't like to look at it. So I don't like to Google those articles about working conditions of people in China and the high rises they have to live in and how they work 20 hours a day and they don't see outside and they don't see their families and they just got to store all their money and they don't have any, I don't want to see that. I just want a comfort shirt. And so it's the reality of the world that we live in. I will get into how to navigate all this, because I'm not going to take my shirt off right now. All right. Just so God, like, that's my gift to you. But there is these things. It is profit and gain and accumulating without regard to others' needs and rights and conditions. And it says in there that they had no comfort. The people that were oppressed had no comfort. And they're not talking about like a comfortable bed. They're talking about protection and security and help. That's comfort. When you protect somebody, when you give them security, when you actually help them out of their oppression. And without that, with all this oppression, the world just becomes a miserable place for a lot of people who have no hope. And that's the reality of the world for a lot of people. When I was studying this, I posted an article earlier this week on God's timing. So I was studying this passage on Monday morning, and what kind of kept coming into my mind was we support a church, and we partner together with a church, who I'll talk about in a minute, down in West Palm Beach called New Song. And connected with New Song is a guy that I've gotten to know through Ronnie, is Ricky Aiken. He works with Inner City Innovators. And I'm friends with him on Facebook. So I just kind of always watch what's going on in Inner City Innovators. And he mentors youth in the Tamarind neighborhood of West Palm Beach. And which I also saw he posted last night, the top 10 murder capitals of Florida. West Palm Beach is number one, and Riviera Beach is number three. And so there's oppression. And so I just watch kind of what Ricky is doing and who Ronnie is working with. And the conversations I've had with those two as I've sought to get to know them and just say, hey, how do we help the oppression that's going on in our community? And I just kept thinking of Ricky. I'm like, man, this seems like these kids have no protection. They have no security. Like, it's every other week that one of the kids he's mentored is getting shot. It just happens regularly. It happens all the time. And I've talked to them about how there's no opportunity. Like, I was talking to Jack yesterday and talk about, like, hey, like, starting to think about college and things like that. Like, for me, and we didn't come from a lot or anything, but like, it was just kind of assumed that I would go to college. That's just kind of what you did. That's what everybody around me did. That's like, there's not these opportunities that people have all the time. And so that's what's going on here. That there's no opportunity there. Like, you're in, because some people are like, oh, look, everybody's got, you know, the same access to education. I'm like, all right, your lot in life is more than where you went to school and what kind of grades you got. All right, so there's oppression that's going on right around here. There's, I know this is how, like, media works right now. They kind of, like, highlight the horrible things in the world to kind of get everybody in a tizzy, but they're still true. I read an article. These are my last three articles. Inner City Innovators, Top 10 Murder Capitals of Florida. I read an article this morning on Venezuela. My friend Susana was from Venezuela, so she's been sending me videos and articles on how to be praying for Venezuela for like the last 4 years. And so I've just been praying for Venezuela, and I saw a new one that was on the news feed this morning about there's Hugo Chavez, this dictator, and just the horrible conditions of the people of Venezuela. It's like the worst oppression and things that have happened in a country, like they're saying, maybe ever. And there's these pictures of this two-year-old little girl just like writhing in pain, and they can't do anything to comfort her or help her. She's just going to die. And that's what's going on over and over and over again throughout the country. I read another article on the Preakness, which was a horse race that happened yesterday. And it's in Baltimore, so right, Baltimore roots, go girl, Lex. Yep, so Karina and Lex from Baltimore, so we got ties. So I'm always interested, Pat, we got some Baltimore ties, your daughters up there. But they said that the Preakness is in this, like, just downtrodden, hard neighborhood that's just broken. And it said in the article that all happens, it's an African-American neighbor. He said the white people come in one day a year to gamble, get drunk, maybe buy some weed or crack. And he goes, and they don't give an F about the neighborhood until next year. That's what's going on, right? That's oppression. There's a neighborhood, hey, I'm going to go and take advantage of this, and I'm going to do it, and then I'll be back next year for when the party happens again. Okay? So, again, he demolishes. He and again, I told you guys this is hard to look at, but this is the reality of the world that we live in. It's what's going on. Now, I'm kind of like Alana at Duffy's. I don't want to look at it. Right? I want to be at the volleyball game Friday night. I want to be at the golf course Saturday afternoon. I want to be at the fun birthday party on Saturday, right? I want to do those things. I don't want to look at the brokenness that we find in our world because it's overwhelming. It's sad. It's hard. But when God sees it, his anger like gets incited. One of my favorite, in a weird way, verses is Amos chapter 2, verse 6. He's a prophet. And I just feel like it's very convicting. It says, because they sell the righteous for silver and the needy for a pair of sandals. So they sell the righteous, other people made in the image and likeness of God, for silver and the needy for a pair of sandals. Those who trample the head of the poor into the dust of the earth and turn aside the way of the afflicted. And that's the posture that goes on in the world as people are oppressed. And this happens like on a very global scale with my shirt. This happens on a very local scale. Inner city innovators, what's going on in our thing. And so thankfully, the scriptures give us a way to move towards it. This is the longest point I'm staying on. The next ones will go faster, all right? But I just think this is just super important. I just think this is very part. And sometimes we want to go to church and it's like, hey, I just want to be happy. And things like, no, like, but the author of Ecclesiastes is like, no, I'm going to tell you the realities of the world and life. And so there should be some of us like, yes, that's true. And so for us, we need to hear it. And in hearing it, we know that the only person that's going to ultimately put it right is God. We can't fix it. Right? We'll get to this point where it says like the person that's two hands are full. Like it's too much for us. We can't fix it all. We know as Christians that God's the only one that can set it right. So there's going to be some very very advantageous people that maybe aren't even Christians that are going to say, hey, we're going to rid the world of hunger. We're going to make every kid be able to read. We're going to get rid of all oppression. Like, no, you're not. Only God can make it all right. And one day Jesus will come and make it all right. But until then, we can see it. We can stare at it and we can be a little sickened by it. We can be convicted of it. And as we're sickened by it, as we're convicted by it, as it grieves us, we can just move towards that thing. We don't have to move towards everything. We don't have to move towards everyone. But we can look at something, right? What's the old starfish thing? Like, oh, you're not going to save all the starfish, but you can save one, right? And you can move towards the thing. You can move towards that oppression that you see. That convicts you. And so for us as a church, I mean, we talk about that we want to live generously. And that, yes, that means giving and financial, and there's an aspect to it, but we also just want to live generous lives. That we just love other people. That we look at who's oppressed, who's poor, who doesn't have the same power that we have. How can I give away some of my power so somebody else gains power? And so for us, we have three avenues right now. That we can come alongside and come. And one is back on Miss Lee. We're back on at Tequesta Terrace. Right? So Tequesta Terrace is a facility over in Tequesta. for older folks. And it's just a place, and a lot of times in our culture, in our youth-driven culture, guess who gets forgotten? Guess who is alone? Guess who doesn't have security or protection or care? It's often the older demographics. We're so youth-driven, but God values and cares about those who often end up isolated and alone. And so we have friendship connection. Literally, we just show up and be friends. Our week. This talk, and all we do is like we ask like two questions. Hey, remember, like, when was a time in your life when blah 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 blah? And we just get to learn and hear and be with somebody. Be with somebody that's maybe alone. So we have Tequesta Terrace. Pat, we've been praying for Jupiter Elementary School since we moved here. And Pat, and so it started with Pat found out the teachers there they have to buy their own paper. So we just started bringing reams of paper. You can still bring reams of paper. And she just started handing them out to teachers who didn't have paper. And that led to last month we were able to go for their after school program and do some activities with the after school kids. There's probably about like 100 kids maybe that came through and just played like little games with them. And so this was great. After that, they invited us to come back. And so over the summer on Fridays, Pat's going to go in and teach some sign language, and we're going to connect an activity to the sign language to connect with the kids that are in summer, their summer program there. So a large percentage of Jupiter Elementary School, English is their second language, right? They're not everyone, but some are going to be oppressed. And so it's an avenue for us just to be there, to be with those students, and it's going to further into next year. And so God, that's another avenue for us. And then the last thing is, yes, we're seeking to plant and establish this church, but we're not just seeking to plant and establish this church. We want to seek to plant and establish a lot of churches. And so one of our partnerships is with Ronnie down at New Song. And Ricky goes to that church, and they're in the Tamarind neighborhood, and they're doing great things down there. They started a moms program this week for moms who decide that they wanted to keep and raise their children. So that started, and that's going to be an ongoing thing. So we'll have partnerships with New Song that are coming up. Okay, so we can't do everything about all the oppression in the world, but we can do something. We can look around us and see. And so for you, for me, pray like, hey, what does that look like here? And because there's enough people that are saying, hey, this is all about me, and I'm going to oppress, I'm going to step on the heads of other people to get what I want. And we have the opportunity to die to ourselves and say, hey, how can I serve? How can I help? All right, I got to hurry up. Verse 4, the second area that we see when the oppression that happens when we live just for ourselves. The cause a lot of this, the oppression, he says, it's just flat out envy of others. Envy of others. He said, Ian Proven, a commentator, said this. He says, in pursuing out of envy in the neighbor above us on the ladder, we inevitably step on the head of the neighbor below us. Right? Again, we're not even aware of it, guys. So I'm not like dropping like guilt hammer on everybody. Like it just happens, and it just happens in ways that we don't even know. And so for us to see what other people have and want it, we end up stepping on the heads and not being generous, not sharing with others. This is just super hard. Like, we live in a culture. Like, I was on Instagram the other day, and have you guys read the articles like Instagram Shop? So not only can you just see now what people are wearing, you can hit a button and it allows you to buy what people are wearing right then, right? And so I mentioned the golf thing, and so Will is super into it now, and he's like, hey, what kind of clubs does Brooks Koepka use? What kind of clubs is Dustin Johnson, you know? So he's asking, so you can look it up and you go to Golf Digest and here's what they used to win, and it lets you click, oh, he uses TaylorMade M6, and so I can click that button and buy an $800 driver, right? And so it's just constant. This envy and this seeing what other people have and thinking that we need it. And they say, hey, all that ultimately leads to oppression of others. And not only does it lead to oppression of others, it leads to like this exhausting rat race of seeking gain. It's a never-ending thing when we continually envy and want what other people have. It happens materially, it has to happen socially, and life just becomes competitive. we were talking to Alana's volleyball coach Friday night, and she said, what was the word that she used? She said that Jupiter has become very...
competitive.
She said it's just a super, like, and she said it wasn't always this way. She said, but it's very competitive around here. And so life becomes a competition, and in that competition, it kind of oppresses others. Another area of life that that when it's I does not lead to flourishing is work. And in work, he gives us two extremes, both of which put self at the center. And one extreme is laziness. It just simply says in verse 5 that the fool folds his hands and eats his own flesh. And so laziness is a way to put yourself at the center. You're not creating anything for others to enjoy or to benefit from. And it forces others to benefit from to you. And then the other side of it is that you can overwork. It says that they have two hands full. That they gather so much stuff that they just got to keep holding on to it. And it becomes exhausting. But he gives us this way forward. He says, a handful. Better is a handful of quietness than two hands full of toil and striving. So a handful. Like, God wants to provide for you. Stuff isn't bad. But you only need a handful of it. You don't need two, right? So if you have one handful, you have what you need, but you're able to what? Be open-handed with the other one and give towards others. And he says, this leads to quietness. Can we get some amens on quietness? That's like the gift of our culture. Like, hey, it's one of our prayers for us as a church that we'd be a place of quietness. In sort of a culture of performance and proving that we'd be a quiet place. That you could come and just rest because of who God is and what he's done for you. This quietness, it's rest, it's peace, it's a calming. And so he's saying, work, have what you need, but work so you can be generous with others. I just looked over at Wayne. Like, Wayne worked, and when we had mold all over our bathroom, he came over and took our load. Like, we'll get to two hands are better than one, right? And so he used his time, he used his abilities, he used the things that he is, to rip out our whole bathroom right in the middle of, like, when he's retired and super busy with work. So, like, it leads to flourishing for other people. And the last thing, he kind of wraps this whole thing up on, I'm getting to the better way, but he says, if you live this way, if you live with yourself at the center, that you'll just end up being a person that's all alone. That you'll be so driven that you have no time for anyone or anything else. And he says that it leaves you wanting. It just leaves you wanting more. Because if you pursue, like, material things, there's always more material things. Like, I'm just on the golf train this morning, I guess, because there's always a driver next year. They already have that one made. That goes further, that goes straighter, that does whatever. And I'm like, I just tell the kids, I'm like, hey man, it's the Archer, not the Arrow, all right? So let's go. And you don't need it. We don't need it. Now every once in a while, you can get, like, you get the upgrade. Go ahead. That's one hand. But it's constant. And the saddest part of this person that's all alone, that the question asks, he never stops to ask the question, for whom or what am I toiling and depriving myself for? He never stops and asks, why am I doing all of this? Now, as a Christian, you have this answer. For whom am I toiling? The answer is, I'm toiling not just for myself. I'm toiling for the glory of God, because everything he does endures forever. Everything he does is lasting. I'm toiling for the good of others. So he's saying, work, be generous, produce, but help it to benefit not just your me, but we. And so the answer for not oppressing others, for envying or overworking, for this continually wanting a more, he says, be content. The sort of answer for it all is contentment. G.K. Chesterton, he's a Catholic theologian, he's brilliant, and he said it this way. He says, there are two ways to get enough. One is to accumulate more and more, and the other, which is a lot less exhausting, is to desire less. He's not saying don't have desires. He's saying desire less. Right? And we'll be content. We'll be okay with what we have. Even there's going to be different seasons of life where we're going to have to, like last week, it was just all these different seasons. Like there's going to be times where like you have more. Corinne and I, like when we got married, we were both working, right? We had high paying jobs, right? And then we moved to Florida. I stopped working and went to seminary, which I had to pay for. And then we had kids, and then she hit pause on being a journalist, and I became a church planter. And those are two different salaries, if you don't know. And so there's been seasons in life where we had more financially to give. It was just, we did. That's okay. We're content with what we have. We get to be generous with what we have. We're generous in different ways than we used to be. And it's good. It's honoring. And so there's going to be different seasons where you're going to be able to be generous in different ways. And what the author here does is, again, he doesn't just demolish, he builds up. And he shows us how the community is the better way. He says better three different times in these few verses. And at the heart of it, at the heart of what he's driving at, is that we're called to live life in and for others. To live life in community. And it's rewarding just not just for like other people. Like, oh yeah, this guy's really sacrificial. This girl's really sacrificial. It's rewarding for us. It's true life. Have you ever met somebody that like went and served and like developed friendships and relationships? Like, oh, that was really a waste of time. No. It's always life-giving. It's always good. It always is a great experience, even if it's terribly hard. And he shows us this better way. In verse 9, he shows us a better way to work. And he says, two are better than one because they have a good reward for their toil. And so in work, working in community, it's better because you're always more productive. It says you have a good reward. You have a good return for your work. And so Friday night, I got a text from Jeremy that he and Jackson were going to be out today because of Jackson's senior trip. And he's like, hey, you want me to meet you up at church on Saturday to help you set up? And I'm like, I'm a little slow, but like I'm starting the passage. I'm like, two is better than one. Yes, I will meet you on Saturday because we can get this done twice as fast on Saturday with Jeremy and I and instead of just, does that make sense? And so it's more productive. It actually goes better. And you know what else it was? It was super fun. I got to get updates on what things are going on with him, and he's got some things going on at the end of the school year and looking ahead and how's it going with having a senior in high school, and I'd be able to share some of the things that we're going through. Like, it was rewarding. It was fun. It was better setting up with Jeremy yesterday and Weston than me this morning, just setting some chairs out there, right? And so it's always more rewarding. So whether it's the church or at your workplace or at home, it's always more productive and rewarding when work is shared, when you do it with other people. And really, this applies to like any area of life. It's always better when you do it as we as opposed to me. I'm not saying it's easier, because that's why we work alone a lot anyway, right? Because then we just get to make the decisions. We're going to do this and this and this and this. But you don't benefit from the ideas and the camaraderie and the things of other people. So work is always better when you do it together. The next thing he says is that it's always better in community because you're able to lift up others as opposed to step on the heads of others. Look at verse 10. It says, "For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow, but woe to him who is alone when he falls, and he has not another to lift him up." So when we get knocked down by life. Not like if, when. When we get knocked down by life's troubles, by the world we live in, by trials we go through, and maybe sometimes that's from other people, or maybe it's like self-inflicted stupid stuff that we do, Or maybe it's just kind of random, it happens, but it will happen. Maybe it's something relational or financial or vocational. Like, if you're alone, you're going to stay down. But if you're in community, you have others to lift you up. You have others to encourage you. You have others to help share the load. God, we're made to do this in community so we can lift one another up, that we can help one another, that we can come alongside the other. Verses 11 and 12 says that we're actually made for friendship versus envying other people. We're meant to be friends, to be for the other, that we can actually be a comfort for others. Compassion is always greater than competition. Instead of competing with other people, what does it look like to show compassion towards them? To actually help them. The language he uses in verse 11 and 12, it's wilderness language. So the God's people were traveling through the wilderness, the desert, and in the wilderness it's hard and it's dark and it's cold, and you got this, it wasn't even on purpose, but like fire before me, like at night there's just a fire going through this desert. You can only just follow that. You don't know what's going on around you, and deserts get really cold at night. And he's saying life can be like that. Life can be hard and dark and cold. And if you have somebody with you, they help you keep you warm. They can, in the first part where it says they had no comfort, you actually can be a comfort to other person. You can help give protection and security. You can remind that other person that's going through the wilderness, the challenges of life, of God's faithfulness, of God's goodness, of God's bigger plan than what we're in right now. We need other people to do that. We need others to help comfort us. And this can happen to us spiritually as well, right? You kind of just feel like spiritually cold. Oh, yeah, I have no desire for God. I really don't want to be around God's people. I want to be on my. I just feel distant, right? We need other people to remind us of, like, hey, I know you might feel this way, but this is how God designed it. God designed you to be with other people. That's why the church matters. God to keep each other warm, both physically and spiritually. That's why we come together every week. The last thing we see is that there's wisdom in community, as opposed to the person that's just all alone. And it's hard to follow what's going on in verse 13 to 16, but basically there's these two kings, and he contrasts them. There's a young king and an old king. There's a king that's born into poverty and one that has wealth. There's one that has wisdom and the other one that has folly. But the most important difference between the two is their attitude towards advice. The one didn't take advice. He no longer took it. He said, I have no use for it. But what we need is we need other people. They help us have wisdom. They help us make decisions. They help us to know the way forward in the complex world that we find ourselves in. And in verse 14, it says that there is this king, and it says, for he went from prison to the throne, though in his own kingdom he had been born poor. And all this stuff sounds good, right? Doesn't it sound good? Like, oh yeah, life and community, I'll take that over being alone, being scared, being stepped on, being oppressive. And a lot of times we want to do it in our own power. And when we try to live this life of community, of bringing comfort to others, of working with other people, of trying to lift people up, instead of it, like, it doesn't last, right? People become annoying. We find reasons that people don't deserve the help that we give them. And so if we just try to do this on our own, we won't do it. It won't last. And that's why the whole scriptures point to this good king who will. And it's only when we look to Jesus do we have the motivation and power to live for this. Only when we look to Jesus do we have the power to live for we and not just me. Because it talks about this king, right? He was born poor, right? Jesus was born poor. Jesus was born oppressed. Jesus was imprisoned by death, right? He took on the oppression of the world on the cross. He entered into it on purpose to take it on himself. And then it says that he resurrected from it. He took our oppression. He took the things that the ways that we oppress others, he took them on himself. And it says that he rose again and he's reigning on the throne. And one day, he says, he'll come back and make it all right. He'll end all oppression. And when we realize that Jesus did that for us, when it was the way that we oppress others, when it was the ways that we live for ourselves, that Jesus came for us, that he laid down his life for us, that he gives us new life, that he generously gives us everything as his children, it's as we stare at that the grace that God gives us, the mercy he's extended to us, the only response is to what? To share that grace, to share that mercy, to befriend people who don't deserve it. And that's motivating. That's lasting. And so it's as we look at Christ that we can begin to live this way. As we look at Christ who invited us in, who made us a we with him, that we can do this for whoever needs it. And that's the sort of church we want to be. That's the sort of people we want to be. That we can stare at the brokenness. We see our own brokenness, and we don't just look away. We can move towards it. That we can invite people to, as we say, experience belonging. That we can live generously. That we could have what we need with our one hand and live generously with the other, so others might flourish, others might have safety, others might have comfort, others might have security, ultimately to have that in Christ. Let's pray.